I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I realized the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5 kilometer run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5 minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Spotlight Oral Care. I know how important oral health is to our overall health and how we really need to look after our teeth and gums by using the best products. I've been using the Spotlight Oral Care Water Flosser. It removes bacteria from deep between the teeth and below the gum line where traditional brushing and flossing cannot reach, while stimulating gums to improve circulation. Paired with my Sonic toothbrush, I love that it gives me a professional feel clean at home. Use discount code GOODGLOW25 at spotlightoralcare.com to get 25% off the entire range. Last week on the Good Glow podcast.
I'd say I sounded completely crazy on the phone because I was like, David Edward is David's girlfriend. And they were just like, Kira, we're at the lake. They said, you know, David jumped in off a bridge. He was with the lads. They were having the crack. And he stuck his head up and said, I think he said hello to them. And then he was just pulled back under. And he hasn't resurfaced.
This week on the Good Glow podcast, I continue my conversation with Kira O'Malley. This is a two-part episode. Last week, Kira spoke to me about her boyfriend, David Gavin. They moved to Canada in 2017 and were settling into their new life in Vancouver. They made lots of friends and David joined a local GAA club. On the weekend of Kira's birthday, David travelled to a game and on the way, the team stopped by a lake to cool down. David jumped into the lake, briefly came up to wave to his friends before he was pulled back under and never resurfaced. Kira rushed to the lake to help in the search for David and she was soon joined by her family and David's family. We pick up the story days after David went missing. His friends and family have gathered at the lake as they desperately search for him. Thank you so much for all the messages this week and the support for Kira. I know that all your messages have meant so much to her. And now we get back to the story. Tell me about the time where you went down and played David's songs, his favourite songs, through a speaker. That, I think, that broke my heart because I can't imagine if that happened how I'd be able to listen to music. But you took a moment, you went down and you played his music into the lake. What were you going through at that point?
So I had David's phone, so I had his playlist on, and a few days previous he was obsessed with Hozier's cover, Do You Wanna Know, I think it's the Arctic Monkeys. It's a cover song in it. And he was dancing around the apartment. He was like, this song is class. And he was completely obsessed by it. And sure, I listened to it anyway. And it was, it's a really good cover. But at the lake, he had brought his speakers that Christmas previous. I had bought him speakers that you can bring into the shower with you. So I had them and I just was like, in my head, I was like, okay, he loved music. Like, he just loved it. So I brought the speakers down. I had the song and I was like playing the music to him. And my heart was, it was like, in one way, I kind of felt comforted because I knew he loved that song. Like, he couldn't stop talking about it a few days previous, but I was just so broken. And I was sitting there, I was nearly rocking myself at the side of the lake listening to the song, just begging David, please, please, wherever you are, please, you know, give me a sign, we need to find you, like, anything. I suppose I didn't know what else to do, so in my head I was willing to try anything. I was like, please, do you know, and I had never really, wouldn't have said I was a holy person. But from the minute I heard about David's accident, my first thing was, please, whoever's up there, David, help us find him. Mm. And I kept talking and praying and asking. And it was like the music was nearly a call for, come on, please guide us, send us something, send us in some kind of right direction to find you.
In your book, you speak about signs, and I suppose maybe before that time you weren't asking for signs for anything. You were just getting on with your life. And then
when you reach this point in your life and you're desperately seeking answers, you speak about asking for signs and connecting with David, I suppose. Tell us about the dragonfly.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked about the dragonfly. I suppose the dragonfly was my first thing, big sign that really got me connected to, oh my God, you know, David is guiding us in some shape or form. You know, we haven't found him, but he is trying to show us he's around. And for that was probably 2 weeks into us searching for him, and we had all the resources out and we just hadn't found him. And every day in my heart I was like, today's the day we're going to find him. Today is the day we're going to find him. And on that particular day, we would spend a lot of time on the bridge where David jumped in, and myself and David's sister were there, and there was this beautiful dragonfly, and he had big blue wings, and blue would have been a very symbolic colour for David because it was his local club's colours. And we both kind of were looking at this dragonfly, and in the beginning we didn't really pass any heed, but then it wasn't going anywhere. So we put out a little stick and we put the dragonfly on a stick. And before that, like, they're really fast, like you wouldn't catch a dragonfly. And we were looking at it and we're like, isn't this weird how the dragonfly is staying with us? And we walked then from the bridge over to like we'd a camper van, because we were sleeping, we were staying in camper vans at the lake. So we brought it over, and everyone was sitting out, and we were showing them this dragonfly. We were all looking over, looking at this dragonfly, and something within me, a feeling was like, there's something more to this. Like, what, you know, a dragonfly doesn't just stay on a stick for no reason. And anyway, that was fine, and we were looking at it, and everyone was kind of having a good look at it. And then later on that evening, one of the people who were helping us search for David read a quote out to me about dragonflies, and it read something along the lines of, they're angels who come down from heaven to show you they're still with you. And something within me was like, I knew, like, you know, it kind of sparked something in me that wasn't there before really. And I started googling dragonflies, and I found the most beautiful poem about a water beetle, and I have it in the book, but I'll give you a brief synopsis. It's about a water beetle who was telling its friends, you know, when I turn into a dragonfly, I'm gonna come back and tell you, because water beetles transform into dragonflies, but unfortunately when they transform and get their wings, they can't go back into the water to tell their friends. And this little water beetle is saying, I'm going to come back, I'll tell you. But anyway, in the poem, the water beetle transforms and turns into a dragonfly and spreads its wings, and that's it. But to me, reading that poem, I was just so overtaken by emotion, because I was like, oh my God, that's David's way of saying, Kira, like, I'm around you. I've taken a different form. I can't come back and tell you where I am right now. Like, the water beetle can't go back. And I was just like, oh my God. I was like, this is David. I was telling everyone that. I was like, it's a sign, it's a sign. And I think everyone was just so elated to see the impact it had had. And I remember telling myself, I was like, if David can show me that, he can show me more. And that's, I suppose, where my connection with signs came. And when you're in such a bad place and you're so devastated and distraught, and I don't even, there's so many words, I was broken. I was completely and utterly broken. And that little bit of something, I was like, oh my God, yes, I need this. And I was like, I said to David then, I was like, okay, I'll ask for signs, I'll look for them, but you need to help us. You need to help us, guide us, you know. And I kept asking him then, okay, help us find you, please, you know. So it was a little glimmer of hope that at the time we all needed. And it's so synchronistic. Like, when you think about it, even finding that poem about the water beetle, you know, and I'm a firm believer now that nothing happens by chance. You're guided to everything you need in the moment. And I was never like that before. I was open-minded. But yeah, that sign just really blew me away. And I've obsessed with dragonflies now. I've got tattoos. I've got, my house is full.
So you left Canada and you came home briefly. You went back over to continue the search and you searched again for David. But the time came where the conditions got too bad. Was the search called off? You went home then for another 7 months before traveling back. Tell us about, you know, that journey home. You hadn't found David and you probably didn't know when you were going back to Canada or if the search would ever resume.
Yeah, so that September we had to call the search off because the weather conditions were going to get too bad. The road to the lake would have been completely frozen over, so you wouldn't have been able to drive down it. And that was our second attempt at searching for David. And we had all the resources. We had divers, we had the helicopters, we had the dog search teams, and we had just exhausted all our avenues. And
how long had you searched for then in that in total at this point?
So in total we had been searching for David from the 30th of June until the end of September.
Okay.
So yeah, that's what, 3 months, isn't it? And when we came home from Ireland, we did come home to hold a memorial service for David. The search was continuing, so it didn't stop when we, that was the only reason I agreed to come home, because I remember saying, I'm not stopping searching for David, you know. But we came home briefly and came back. So we had literally, it was heartbroken. It was actually, yeah, we were all heartbroken because I suppose every day we thought today is the day we're going to find him. But like even I think a week before we had actually finished the search the second time round, we could have finished a week earlier, but we had to keep going because we were, you know, we had to keep putting everything, but we had been advised by the search teams who were helping us and all the support we were getting. They said, you know, the conditions are going to get too bad. We advise you to go home to Ireland and come back the following spring, which would be the following April. So that would be 7 months later. And they said the lake would be frozen over, but as the washer melts in the lake, that would be a good opportunity to find them. And they said, at this rate, you know, that's your best bet. But they did advise us that the odds of even finding him then were quite low. But like we were determined and we had faith and we were going to do everything we could to find David. Coming home that time was awful, because I suppose when we found out about David's accident, we were heartbroken and it was awful, but we had a purpose and our purpose was to find David. Going home that September, we had 7 months where there was nothing we could do. It wasn't even like we'd go to Ireland and they could be searching. There was nothing any search team could do. So going home on that plane, I remember being like, oh my God. And I remember thinking, 7 months, you know, what the hell am I going to do for 7 months? Because it's a long time. Like it's a very long time, especially when you're waiting, you know, to do something like that. And I had been living in Vancouver, so I had left my mine and David's apartment and I was moving home. So I had no job, I had no anything. I wasn't fit to work anyway. But I remember just begging David. I was like, please just give me some kind of strength and us all strength to get through these few months to find you. Because, so that plane journey was very hard. But I suppose we still kept on to our faith, and coming to our home to Ireland, everyone was just like, we have your back, we're with you, you know, next time, as the saying goes, third time lucky. So we were just praying. But I suppose my mental health really did take a really awful hit coming home, because I think I hadn't really even started grieving, to be honest, because I was so focused on finding David and we were so active in the search that we were so busy. And coming home to Ireland and being back I was back in with my parents. I was like, oh my God, it was like my body said, oh my God, this David's gone. David's missing. It was like all the emotions finally got a time to sink into my body and I didn't know how to react whatsoever at all. And I just got really overwhelmed, and I had to be linked in with community mental health, which I think now it was amazing support into anyone who is struggling, because grief is it's all kinds of emotions, and everyone will navigate their own journey. But I suppose it's so important to get the help that you need.
And I could imagine that 7 months was the worst time, because you can't grieve, you can't find peace in anything. Like, David's in Canada, you're at home in Ireland. 7 months probably felt like an eternity. And you said that you reached out for help, which is so important. And I think this week, especially when we're listening to Meghan Markle's interview, and she said that, you know, she had these thoughts and she asked for help and didn't get it. I can't imagine what that feels like. How did you kind of get through the days? Obviously, you had amazing support from friends and family, but you must have felt like you were in such a lonely place in your head, because, like what you said, your person isn't gone, so you may feel that you don't have purpose.
Yeah, I suppose I didn't want to be here. I would have, at the time, I remember I just would be, even putting on the wash machine, I'd just break down, and I was just heartbroken. But there was still a little bit of me that was like, I have to, something in me has to keep going, because, you know, in the next few months I need to go back to Canada. But yeah, I really, really struggled. And getting through the day, it was just so monotonous, because to me, all I wanted to do was X the days off and say, okay, one day closer. But it wasn't 2 weeks or it wasn't a month. It was 7 months. And even at that time, we didn't know if we were going in April or if we were going in May. So I kind of, at the time, I would have been put on medication, and I would have kind of, sleeping tablets at the time. I felt, you know, I just wanted to sleep. I wanted to do anything to switch my mind off. So yeah, I just, getting through the day was really, really difficult. And I had amazing support. And David had sent me a dog called Hope, who was keeping me busy. And there's a lot of synchronicities in the book about, even though that time was so difficult, David did everything to make his presence known, to show I'm here, I'm supporting you. And there was days I nearly cursed him for sending me that dog, because all I wanted to do was stay in bed and not get up. And then I think of this vulnerable dog down there, and I'd get up and I'd bring her for a walk. But I suppose I was craving someone to tell me we were going to find David, or I was craving someone to tell me, you know, where he was, someone to say he's in this position in the lake. And yeah, I just felt disconnected. Like, I didn't know what version, I didn't know who I was anymore. I started dyeing my hair. My hair at one stage was pure black. And I think that was intentional, because I didn't know who this Kira was. And I felt so disconnected that I was nearly trying to look how I felt on the inside. And I just felt awful. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what I was clinging on with sometimes. But then the support and, you know, counselling, I was linked in with counselling as well, and mental health. But I suppose David spread a little bit of magic as well. And you would have read that in the book, that he started sending me messages at a time when I needed it more than anything else.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. But first, I wanted to give you an update on my Spotlight Oral Care Teeth Whitening Strips that I've been wearing for an hour a day for 2 weeks. I've been keen to whiten my teeth and have a healthy smile, and I've seen instant results since using them. Spotlight Oral Care has something for everyone. It was founded by two Irish dentists, so you can be rest assured that the products are safe and effective. They're free from toxins, cruelty-free and palm oil-free, and their toothpaste tubes are 100% recyclable. Check out spotlightoralcare.com for more. Now, back to my conversation.
I had been to psychic mediums at the time, and all I wanted to know, I'd go in and I'd be like, are we going to find David? we're going to find David. And if they didn't tell me we were going to find David, I'd go to another one. And before, I would have never, ever gone to mediums, because I suppose I didn't need to. And I didn't really understand what they do. But like, I don't know, have you ever gone to one yourself? You know, they...
No, I haven't.
Really? They have an amazing connection where they connect with spirit and they can connect with your loved ones and give you messages. They won't always tell you what you need to hear. You know, what you want, you could go in and want, they'll tell you, you know, what they channel. And I had been going to a few of them, but David had one of a person I would have known approached me. And they said, David has given us messages. And I was like, what do you mean David has given you messages? I was like, what the hell? Like, I didn't know what to think. And they said, you know, he is giving us messages he wants to give you. And I was, at the time, I was like, is this a joke? Like, because things were bad enough. I was like, I don't need this. But anyway, they started giving me little handwritten messages from David. And I remember one day it was an awful day, and I was driving and I was at the side of the road, and there was a lorry coming towards me. And I just, you know, when you're crying so much, I couldn't see the road in front of me. And there was nearly a bit of me that was like, I just want to keep driving. But obviously a bigger bit of me that said, Kira, pull in. So I pulled in and I got a phone call from this person, and in the book I've called them Sophie, because they don't want to be, they want to remain anonymous. And they were able to tell me what had happened. They're like, David said we need to call you. David said we need to call you. And I was like, what? And they were able to tell me what I was feeling. And I remember just breaking down, because I was like, oh my God, he's with me. You know, and I knew he was with me, but when you're feeling so low and all over the place, you just kind of, you don't feel them. And I was kind of noticing that. I was like, I feel David more around on days where I'm kind of a little bit more kind of feeling a little more kind of upbeat. On days when I'm in bed for the whole day, he's not going to send me any signs. So that kind of uplifted me and gave me the boost I needed. And it got me more, you know, because I spoke about the dragonfly and I was into signs. But when I came home then few months, I was just in such a bad place. I couldn't, you know, even if he did send a sign, I wouldn't be looking for it, or I wouldn't notice it. So then he sent me that, and then he sent those other synchronicities then. So I kind of, a few months before we went back the third time, I kind of was like, okay, David is, it was like he gave me that little boost I needed. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go back. And I kind of felt, okay, I can do this. And I got my focus back a little bit.
And did you feel like you're clearly connected with your intuition? And you speak about how, I suppose, you got to know yourself again, this kind of new version of yourself. Did you feel when you were going back for the third time that you would find him?
I think I always thought we were going to find him. And I don't know now, was it my intuition? Because at the time I didn't even know what an intuition was. But I think it was, yeah. I think I had got so connected to knowing that he was around me, even though all I wanted was his physical presence. I just wanted him there. But yeah, going back the third time, I had a fire in my belly. I was like, we're going to find him. Like, we have to find him and bring him home, because we wouldn't have been able to rest. I don't know how I would have moved on with my life. I would never have stopped searching for him.
Who did you go back with?
So the third time we went back, it was myself, David's parents, and my sister and dad.
Right. And how were David's parents at this point?
Yeah, I think we were all just so heartbroken, but so determined to put everything we could into finding him and bringing him home. And they're amazing, get on so well, and we're just so grateful that through this we have each other, and like, we've bonded more than we ever would have. They're my little piece of David, and I'm theirs.
Oh, that's so beautiful, Kira. Tell us about then, you get back to Canada, and it's a private search this time, funded by you guys through, you know, I suppose the community and everyone around you donating. Tell me what that time was like and what was going on and what did the lake look like when you went back?
Yeah, so when we went back the third time, the lake was completely different. Like even getting down to the road, there was snow, there was ice, and the lake was completely frozen over. So when we got there, it was completely different because we were there during the summer and it was sunny and, you know, you could see the lake. So in one way, it kind of shielded us a little bit because it was like we're somewhere. It was like we had been transported somewhere else. But it was still kind of startling to think, oh my God, okay, David is somewhere there, but now instead of water, it's ice. But yeah, it was completely, completely different than before. And when we got there, the search, I suppose, was slow enough to start because of the conditions. So what we were waiting for was for the ice to melt so we could get boats in. But yeah, we were there a few days, and on the day we found David, we would have had, it was the first day the canine search team had came to do their searching, and they had supported us the last time around. And it's amazing to think all the services we had, we'd a bond with them. Do you know, when we seen them, we all embraced and hugged, and we were just so happy they were back and they were so happy to help us. And, you know, there was tears, there was like, okay, you know, we're going to do everything we can. And yeah, on that morning, then they were there and they were getting ready and we were kind of pottering around. And because at the lake was still frozen, it was hard to get a boat out on it. So we weren't, you know, we kind of had to watch on while they got all their stuff and got the dogs ready. And yeah, so on the day we found him, there was kind of a lot of frustrations because we're like, oh my God, you know, are we going to find him? Do we have, what's going on? And, you know, so we kind of went off and we went for a spin in the car, just because sometimes it was so overwhelming being there and you felt like you were in a little bubble, and, you know, the bridge and the lake. And so we went for a drive, and when we came back, we were walking over the bridge that David would have jumped in. And the dog handlers were walking across the bridge, and they kind of flagged us down with their hand, and we put down the car. But we had so many times that we thought we had found David throughout the other searches that we kind of thought, oh, maybe they're looking for a part for the boat. And they looked into the car, and their faces straight away, we were like, oh my God, this is different. And they just said, we think we found him. And I was like, oh, I don't think any of us, I think the silence in the car, just nobody could say anything because they were the words that we longed to hear. They were the only words we wanted to hear for so long, that then when you hear them, nothing prepares you for it. I remember just getting out of the car and just looking, and I went and I stood on the bridge and I walked over and I looked out and I could see something down below that they were covering. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. I was like, that's it. And I remember being like, oh my God, this is what I've wanted. I should be feeling so, so grateful. But my heart just, it was like someone had just, I don't know, thrown a block of stones on me or something. It just felt so heavy. And yeah, we all got out then. And after a few minutes, then we all embraced, and complete shock. We were like, oh my God. And then we were kind of given an option. We were like, do you want to go down there? And I remember I was like, I need to get closer, like, you know, because it didn't feel real. I was like, oh my God. So we got down and it felt like the longest journey I've ever walked in my life. And when we got closer, you could see, you know, that David was there. And we got to kind of sit, and it was like a piece of plastic. And I remember sitting there beside this piece of plastic with my hands on top of it, just being like, oh my God, David's under there. And like, they couldn't tell us it was David. And obviously we knew it would have to be, he'd have to be formally identified. But I was like, oh my God, even thinking back, I'm like, oh my God, it's just so overwhelming. But at the same time, I was like, oh my God, we found him. We found him. And then a few minutes later, I'd be like, oh my God, this is real.
How many days into the third search did you find him?
the third search, we had only been there, I think we'd been there a week, so we hadn't been there that long.
Wow. And did you find David in a place that you felt like you'd searched a thousand times before?
Yeah. So it was a place that we had searched before, and he was very close to where he would have jumped in. And it was a place that we all kind of thought he was kind of in that locality, but obviously, you know, it was sonar equipment they would have used to try and pick him up, but it hadn't picked him up. But yeah, he was, yeah, like, it definitely in a locality we thought he was. So we were so lucky really to have found him. And it was amazing. A dog called Coda who found him, and like, dogs are just amazing. And like, wow, it was, yeah, like, it's amazing to think, like, you know, that dogs are trained in that. And it was just, yeah, it was all the emotions, to be honest.
What date was that he was found?
That was the 29th of April. I do get confused sometimes with the day because it's different in Ireland, but between Ireland, yes, and Canada, but the 29th of April.
Okay. Those days that follow, obviously, you were probably experiencing emotions that maybe you were unexpected, that you didn't know were going to hit you. And then having to tell people, how did you get through those couple of days?
Yeah, I think it didn't really hit until I rang my mom, and I knew she had known because Dad and Lindsay, my sister, would have been chatting to her. But I remember saying, "Mom, we found him. And I remember my heart just being like, oh my God, I've said the words. And like, I just thought I was going to fall to pieces. And then another bit of me was like, oh my God, we found him. Do you know? So it was like, you know, because everyone, even in Ireland, they were like, oh my God. It was like someone described it as the happiest, saddest news they've ever heard. Because like, yeah, you know, the odds were against us. And, you know, I think some people thought we were never going to find him. So, you know, it was so heartbreaking because we did find him, but yet we did find him. And that was something we were all, you know, longing for. So it was just an emotional roller coaster completely, because I suppose the reality had set in, oh my God, this is it. Like, you know, we have found him. So it was like, I suppose, the realest it had ever felt, if that makes sense, even though we had been dealing with this for a few months.
Bringing him home then, were you on the same flight as him coming home, or?
Yeah, we made sure we got on the same flight as him. And yeah, I think when we landed into Dublin Airport and we got to see him in the mortuary, in a coffin, that's when I think it really felt real to me, to be honest, because we did memorial service for him. And I remember being like, what the hell is a memorial service? Do you know? Because, you know, we associate when someone has died with a coffin, and you know, the funeral ceremony. So yeah, it felt really real then. But the support we had when we landed we brought David home to his home house, and like, all the community had came out. We had support from all over the world, and you know, I remember people coming in and they were like hugging us so tightly, and they were like, can't believe you did it, but we're so sorry. And people were like, nearly, oh my God, thank God. But at the same time, it was, you know,
at the same time, you miss him, you miss his friends, miss him, his community misses him, his teammates miss him. Mm-hmm. I think he was such a gorgeous person, absolutely stunning. But it's hard then, I suppose, for the community, because David's home, and you're bringing him home, and it's so real for everybody then, and it's so sad.
Yeah, I think, because at times you'd nearly convince yourself, oh, David's working out in Canada, or even some of, you know, his family or friends would say nearly that it wasn't real. because yeah. as you said, you know, bringing them home and having a funeral, that's real. That's what we associate when someone passes. So yeah, and everyone missed him so much. And yeah, it was a real, I suppose, in that time frame, it was just so clear how special David was, because he not only brought family and friends together, he brought whole communities together. It was like he had just touched so many people's life, and like it was just amazing to think that we got to spend time with him. And you know, we missed him so much, but we just felt so grateful to have been gifted that miracle of finding him, because to be honest, it was like, you know, it really was. And yeah, I just felt like he guided us, that everyone, every search team he sent in, like when we were hitting a lull, he would send someone else in, you know, another service, or that he was very active and he was with us, guiding us the whole way.
He wanted to come home. He wanted to be found. And it's so beautiful. And I'm so happy. I'm so happy for you that you got him home, because I think it changed your journey from that point on. It allowed you to kind of almost pick yourself back up in a way and get back to Kira and yeah. figure out, you know, what your next steps were going to be, what your life was going to look like. And I love that your book is divided into two parts. And the second part is so beautiful, and it's all about, you know, your self-care journey and going into Reiki, and you call it the turning point. Mm. So what was the turning point for you?
We had found David in the April, and that following Christmas I had gone back to work and I was functioning. So I had gone back to work, and that would have been the second Christmas after David's accident. And I remember thinking it won't be as bad as the last one. But anyway, how wrong I was. It was awful. But I suppose it sparked something in me. And before then, I kind of was wanting someone to come with their little magic wand and fix things and make things better for me. And I remember sitting at David's grave on New Year's Eve. And I remember saying, David, like, I will do whatever it takes. I can't. The pain I had been clinging on to and the grief felt so heavy that I needed something. I was willing, whereas before then I wasn't. I was kind of just functioning. And a part of me was like, I need to live rather than just survive. And I suppose you could say I surrendered. You know, I surrendered. I said, David, please help me. And I suppose I actively took ownership of my own healing, which is so empowering. You know, I said, okay. And he'd been guiding me anyway. And I kind of fell into meditation then and gratitude. And I remember first doing gratitude, thinking, oh my God, like, what could I be grateful for? And like, our minds are so powerful. And I had decided for a long time, you know, I had literally told my mind my life, oh, the minute this happened, my life was over. And in one way, that life was over, but life wasn't over. And I deserved to live a good life, and you know, a life that David would guide me to. So yeah, I started doing little things, and I suppose self-care is all the little things, and getting a better relationship with myself. And yeah, I suppose David has guided me to self-love myself. Now that's the wrong word. Guiding me to on a journey of self-love and to a different relationship with myself that I never had before. And I just feel so lucky for that. And I've trained in Reiki since. And I just became fascinated with how clever our minds are. And I got into positive affirmations as well, and I started saying things like, you know, I am joyful. And I kind of started changing my mindset, as in what had happened was awful, but it didn't determine how my life was going to go. And yeah, I just kind of said, you know, I deserve to live a good life, and I deserve to honor David. And that's the way I seen it, as in the grief was all the love I had for him. And I started to realize that, you know, in order to do the healing, you've got to do the feeling. And you know, sometimes I would push grief away, and I started to realize I have to sit with this because this is all the love I have and continue to have for David. So I started sitting in and connecting in with my feelings and giving them the time and space they deserved. And I realized, okay, Jesus, it's really uncomfortable and really hard, but I would get some kind of comfort afterwards. It was like, okay, I did a bit of healing there. And even this week, David would have turned 30. So it was his birthday on Tuesday. And I woke up and I was kind of just feeling, okay, obviously I miss him and I would have done anything to have him there, you know, and I have an amazing connection with David now. And I ask for signs all the time. But yeah, I just kind of sat with, okay, I'm feeling a bit sad or whatever. I have to honor that because I miss him and I love him so much. And yeah, I just feel so lucky and grateful to have had him and have him in my life. And I kind of document in the book all the little tools I used. And I've kind of got so passionate about this because I've kind of trained in a few courses, you know, and I want to help people to understand that nothing that happens you defines you, and that you can kind of, you can overcome any challenge life throws at you. And I've got kind of great growth from grief. You know, I'm a completely different person now than I ever was. We laugh and I'm like, David, well, he wouldn't even know this person. But I know he's guided me. And going through the journey, there was a lot of pain. There was a lot of suffering, but there was so much love. And even now, I suppose, I feel like I was gifted a journey. And I'd do anything to have David back. But I think it was all part of some kind of plan that we're not even aware of sometimes. And I think his legacy will live on through the book and through helping other people, because he just, you know, he really is the most amazing person. I'm looking at his picture here now, and you're right, he was fine looking thing as well.
I think it's your words are so beautiful, and I think we should leave it there because it was just such a beautiful way to end it. But you know, you say that David has guided you, and David guided you on this path, and now you're helping people. And it's a wonderful way to live your life. I know that, you know, helping people gives you such a purpose and a reason to get up in the morning and to live a full life, I think is so important. And I think when you're helping people, you feel like your life is full. So there's definitely a second book in you in terms of... We all want to know, you know, we want to go on this, the next part of your journey with you. And we're all supporting you. And I'm sure you feel that yeah, there are so many people that love you and are supporting you and willing you on. So you will have to come back when you write that second book and we'll check in with you again. But I just wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing your story today. I know it's so hard, and it can be so upsetting to kind of go back and talk about those days, but I really appreciate, and you will help so many people through it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Spotlight Oral Care. If you enjoyed this episode, please do leave me a review. You can check out more about my story over on thegoodglow.ie or follow me on Instagram, georgie.crawford.